The announcement was very terse, and Mr. Kilduff could barely speak the words. He was choked with emotion. Tears were in his eyes as he said, John F. Kennedy died at 1 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time today here in Dallas. He died of a gunshot wound in the brain.
Within an hour, Sid found himself the only radio correspondent present in Air Force One, the presidential plane where a solemn Lyndon Johnson took the oath of office.
I do solemnly swear.
I do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And will to the best of my ability.
And will to the best of my ability.
Preserve.
Preserve.
Protect.
Protect.
Defend.
And defend.
Constitution of the United States.
That shocking and senseless pattern of public murder was repeated twice 5 years later, and each time the news came on radio. First from Memphis, April 4th, 1968.
Dr. Martin Luther King was shot and killed in Memphis, Tennessee this evening by a sniper. Witnesses said a well-dressed young white man in his 20s was seen running from the area and dropped a weapon, which has been recovered by Memphis police. Memphis police have also recovered a blanket from a nearby warehouse building from which the assassin allegedly fired the shot.
Another murder, barely 2 months later in Los Angeles. This announcement was an actuality of the mutual broadcasting system.
Senator, how are you going to counter Mr. Humphreys and his backgrounding you as far as the delegate votes go?
You can just go and start your struggle for it.
Senator Kennedy has been shot. Is that possible?
No!
Is that possible?
It's good.
Is it possible, ladies and gentlemen? It is possible. He has. Not only Senator Kennedy. Oh, my God. Senator Kennedy has been shot. And another man, a Kennedy campaign manager, and possibly shot in the head. I am right here. Rafer Johnson has a hold of a man who apparently has fired the shot.
That tape reminds me of the Hindenburg recording. How could a mere newspaper account compete with that kind of instantaneous horror? In a lighter vein now, here's a comment on the 1965 blackout from Gary Moore, who began on radio in the mid-30s, so he ought to know something about it.
I had to be driving along in my car when it happened, and news began to come in that it was not only New York, but it was New York in the suburbs, then it was New York in New Jersey, then it was New York in Connecticut, then it was New York in upper state New York, all the way up into New England. And your immediate reaction in those jumpy times was, what is it, Russia? That somebody dropped a bomb on something? Now, the radio people could have come on in a lot of hysterical stories. They could have frightened the populace to death. They, without question, and I made it my business that night to tune from station to station, they all came on with a calming effect saying, we don't know what it is, but don't worry, don't get upset until you hear further, you know. They kept the information flooding in, and pretty soon we realized it was really not much more important than a fuse blowing out in your house as far as your future life was concerned.
As a matter of fact, some newsmakers even used radio to get messages home.
It's got about 40 cars, people looking to get in, out, can't get home, can't move their cars up because they can't get them on the elevator. The elevator's not moving, so they're all out of action.
If my wife was listening, Marion, sleuth, I hope everything is all right.
I love you.
November 9th, 1965. An incredible power blackout in the Northeast, and 30 million people are plunged into total darkness. Mr. Sneed, you played an important role in that blackout, did you?
You might say I played an important role. Yes, I pulled the plug.
You what?
Went up to Niagara Falls to the power plant and just pulled the plug, that's all.
I don't understand, sir. We heard it was a relay switch went out.
No, are you kidding? Yes. One plug goes into Canada, the other one goes into America. You just pull them out of the wall, that's all. Company I work for, the Disaster Corporation of America.
Yes?
We planned the blackout as a little promotional stunt for a client of ours, the transistor radio industry.
But
we were trying to prove that in a power failure, a transistor radio is your only contact with the outside world. People with the transistors in that blackout were the only ones who knew what was going on. Everybody else just stood around staring into their candle.
Now, Mr. Sneed, what about this company of yours, the
Disaster Corporation?
That's Stan Freberg, irrepressible as ever, and one of radio's greatest salesmen. The space program began as a regular feature on radio. Once the capsule got out of camera range, it was radio all the way. starting with Alan Shepard, America's first man in space, May 5th, 1961.
On the periscope, what a beautiful view.
I bet it is.
Cloud cover over Florida, 3 to 4 tenths near the eastern coast. Obscure is up through Hatteras.
Plus 4 minutes, 20 seconds. All UHF.
You can see Okeechobee.
One, tail three.
Identify Andros Island.
And when Apollo 13 lost power in space April 14th, 1970, only radio kept the capsule in touch with a manned space center in Houston.
We appear to have had some kind of accident in the region of the fuel cells and the oxygen tanks. We have not tried too much to reconstruct the what has happened because we were more concerned at the moment for getting the situation under control. As you have seen, we've begun to use the limb as a device for keeping oxygen in both the command and service command module and the lunar module, and we're using the power system from the lunar module.
Ever since 1955, civil rights has been one of the major news stories. Radio has covered all the angry and violent moments from Selma, Watts, Detroit, and 1,000 other places. But it has also lavished time on the aftermaths, when newsmakers spoke with more reason and less passion. This is James Meredith speaking on radio after the Mississippi confrontation of 1962.
Is it still your intention, Mr. Meredith, to enter the University of Mississippi?
That's right, sir. I think it is basic and essential to better relations among the races of this country, particularly in the South, and of course, particularly in Mississippi. We will have to have trained leadership. And of course, through the years, we've tried training Negro leaders out of the state. It doesn't work. And the only place that the Negro can receive training that will be of a real benefit to the state is in the state.
Most of us take for granted nowadays the combination of technology, commentary, and energetic reporting that make up a modern news department. Most large commercial stations have reporters, editors, mobile units, stringers, correspondents, and everything it takes, more or less, to keep their listeners in constant touch with what's going on in the world. Believe me, it wasn't always this way. This is Frank George, executive editor of WINS, who began as a professional newsman in the 1950s.
Now, radio's a little bit like show business, and even in its news coverage. It's less today a show business mentality than it was in the 50s, but there was always the thrust towards the grand spectacular, the great one-time event, the P.T. Barnum thing. And when we first started to use reporters, we went out after the P.T. Barnum type thing. We had a fire. You'd have a guy reporting from the first floor of the smoking building. When there was a coal mine and a cave-in down through West Virginia, we'd go down there and the reporter would drop the microphone down through a 2-inch tube, and he'd record the guys trapped underground. One of the funniest tapes I ever heard, we had two reporters out at the Highland Park Zoo in Pittsburgh, where three orangutans had escaped. One of them was saying, "Do you see him?" And the other guy was saying, "No, I don't see him." And we were live on the air. One of them said, "Yeah, I see him now. They're right in this tree above me." And all we heard was a thud and a couple grunts and groans. And then he threw it back to the studio, which, of course, everybody was completely broken up. And nobody could go on with the newscast. Those are the kind of things we did as we began to use the equipment. We don't do those things enough now.
Contrast that monkey business with the serious journalism of today's coverage of the nation's capital. This is Sid Davis, Group W's bureau chief.
I remember when you would read of the actions of the Senate Finance Committee or the Senate Judiciary Committee only in your best newspapers. Today, this is covered by broadcasting. We spend a good deal of our time here covering committee hearings that we would not have touched 10 years ago. We no longer take the Food and Drug Administration for granted. It involves me and you and my kids and your kids and everybody else today. We cover a great deal more that deals with the consumer, which is everybody, today than we ever did before. I don't remember a time when we spent as much time over at the Federal Trade Commission as we do now. We've been very, very strong in the area of reporting civil rights. We have been very strong in our coverage of urban affairs. This is a subject that's very close to the people we serve. We did the Judge Carswell broadcast when the president nominated Carswell, and it was before the Senate. We had two men outside the Senate chamber. We had two men outside, we had a man inside. And we made these three men runners to go in and get the vote as it was happening. We had a man at the White House, and we had a man at Judge Carswell's home in Tallahassee, Florida. And it was instantaneous news. We were able to determine within 2 or 3 minutes that the Carswell vote would be defeated. And we switched immediately to the White House, and then we switched to the judge's home in Tallahassee. Now, I don't say that this is anything new for radio, but it certainly is new in the sense that we did it all within 17 minutes. This is what radio can do today, and it's going to get much easier for us to do it in the future. The equipment technology is unbelievable. And with satellites, we're able to do this from coast to coast. We're able to do it around the world, and it's taken for granted to a large extent now.
In the course of a routine newscast one day in June of 1965, live from the fish room of the White House, Sid felt a tug on his lapel. Everyone listening heard the following.
The president just said something humorous. Everybody is laughing, and he is now walking right by our microphones. Says we'll see him in Texas. Hi, Mr. President. The president also said...
Yes, sir. It's nice to see you.
Sid, are you broadcasting here?
Yes, sir. I'm on the air,
well,
sir.
I declare. Well, I'll bet it's a good broadcast.
It is. We're doing
it's as good a broadcast as you are a reporter. Well, I'm mighty proud of you.
Thank you very much, sir.
That was the president talking, and he's in a very good mood. And he says that he will see the astronauts in Texas on Saturday morning, and that's when they'll have their welcome home. This broadcast has come to you from the White House.
I'll be back in a moment.
The Fuller Paint Company invites you to stare with your ears at yellow. Yellow is more than just a color. Yellow is a state of mind, a way of life. Ask any taxi driver about yellow, he'll tell you. Or a banana salesman. Or a coward. They'll tell you about yellow. Oh, excuse me. Yellow? Yes, I'll take your order. Dandelions a dozen. A pound of melted butter. Lemon drops and a drop of lemon. And one canary who sings a yellow song. Anything else? Yellow? 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 Oh, disconnected. Gosh, you'll call back. For the Fuller Color Center nearest you, check your phone directory. The yellow pages, of course.
Like good advertising, good reporting is painting with sound, voice, and words. The history of radio is filled with examples of the words and voice getting in each other's way. The fluffs that result are part of the history of broadcasting and should not be left out of this album. We've collected just a few, and we'd like for you to hear them, bearing in mind that fluffs can happen to anyone who stands in front of a microphone. To begin with, here is what started out to be a perfectly serious report on President Eisenhower's birthday back in 1953.
The president driving into Hershey, Pennsylvania to celebrate his 63rd birthday. 30,000 or more people were cheering him, all the folks who make Hershey chocolate with and without nuts. Fred Waring was on hand to conduct a chorus of 1,800. Ben Hogan to give an exhibition on how he drives a golf ball. And that was especially to our Catholic president, a demonstration like that famous Ben Hogan power golf.
Well, Lowell, I won't putter around with that one.
From time to time, charges of bias are leveled at the medium. They're accused of giving too much time to one story and sacrificing another. Well, how could anyone possibly accuse this news department of partiality during its nightly news roundup?
In Washington, General Bradley's speech today was one of several interesting news developments dealing with our military defenses. Here's a summary by Gunner Back. We seem to be unable to contact Washington at this time. Let's try once again. Our cue to Washington is, here is a summary by Gunner Back. Sorry, we seem to be unable, for some inexplicable reason, to contact correspondent Gunner Back in Washington. Now then, to the nation's sports fans, the biggest news in quite a while is building tonight in Chicago, where world heavyweight champion Rocky Marciano is about to meet that challenge from ex-champ Jersey Joe Walcott. We sent correspondent Tom Casey to the weighing-in ceremonies today, and he recorded this report at that dramatic scene. Well, Mother told me there would be days like this. Shall we try once again for Chicago? Suppose we come back to you in just a moment or two. On this cue, I'll be back in a minute with more news.
Headline Edition is one of over 60 top ABC news shows brought to you each week by a distinguished staff of reporters, analysts, and commentators. ABC specializes in swift, accurate, and complete reporting of the latest happenings here and abroad. That kind of news coverage doesn't just happen. A trained newsman fills in the coloring that... A trained newsman fills in the coloring that brings the event to life, but it takes an experienced correspondent to know how that event fits the overall news pattern. For penetrating analysis...
Well, once you fluff, the idea is to get out of it gracefully. Here is the late beloved Adlai Stevenson.
Protest demonstrations have taken place by workers whose trade union rights have been betrayed, by Catholics whose freedom of expression has been circumscribed. By a professional man. Well, I believe it at least is a Christian right.
Actually, I don't think newsmen get sufficient credit for the nightly hazards they endure. If it's not rioting or war or disaster, it's the sponsor's cocktail party just before airtime.
Countries like Norway, which, for example, who think that sooner or later the Beijing regime, which controls the continually all of the China, should represent the country in the QN, that China should be represented by Mao and his constituents in the Yuan, but how that control is to be obtained. They do not like to have it shoved down their throats that the part of the price for the Russians agreeing to discuss communist aggression against Agria.
Furthermore, not just anyone can read news on the air. You have to be a linguist, familiar with an incredible number of strange, foreign-sounding names.
And so for Pepto-Bismol and Sunday News Special, this is Walter Cronkite saying good night.
Those are just a few of the great gaffers of broadcasting from recent years. Radio, when you come right down to it, is a business. You can do the greatest work in the world, but you can't keep it up if no one listens or buys time. On this subject, Rod McLeish gets the final word.
Radio has a kind of a moral quandary facing it. I don't say it should be all serious, and it should all be devoted to public debates and to the issues and ideas of the times. After all, those are things that still a majority of the population finds dull. And broadcasting should go on playing the top 40. It should go on screaming and yelling the way it does, because I guess that's what appeals to an awful lot of people. But also, a bigger portion, perhaps a more significant portion of its time, should be devoted to the development of essayists and commentators. Should be devoted to getting all kinds of points of view on the air, the right-wing nuts and the left-wing nuts included, and all the more responsible, serious people in the spectrum in between them. It can become the great forum for the exchange of ideas. And in that way, it will serve its time. And radio broadcasting can do this. It can also entertain. And I think this, in the final analysis, is the tremendous opportunity open to it and to the people who run it and the people who organize it to see how they can balance between the not necessarily incompatible forces of profit, entertainment, and exchange of ideas.
We've tried during these six records to bring you a nostalgic look at radio's delightful past. To call it a history of radio might be overstating it. It's an attempt to look back with affection at some of the shows and the people who helped make radio. We've probably left out your favorite personality or program, but we would have needed 100 more records to include every beloved radio artist or program of the past and present. And in saluting the past, we also want to pay tribute to radio's present and future. We also hope that these records have a kind of historical perspective, because someday, maybe, one of your kids will ask, what was radio really like? And hopefully this album will help them understand how it really was. This is Jack Bogut speaking for Group W, the Westinghouse Broadcasting Company, and KDKA, celebrating 50 years of radio.